A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. So I was talking yesterday, got a text from my friend Rebecca Schmoy, who I've known for years and years and years, starting back with 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. She is now a state representative in the state of Kansas. And she just texted me, reach out, see how I was doing. It's been a while since we've talked. And I don't know, sometimes the universe kind of plants thoughts. So tomorrow is actually going to be the first wedding anniversary since Missy passed away. So I don't know if the universe was just telling her, like, hey, check in on Cam. But anyway, she did. We're chatting. And we start talking about the legislative session in Kansas this past year. And look, Kansas is we don't talk much about Kansas on the program because Kansas has really good gun laws. There's really generally not a big threat of like assault and bans or things like that. But she said, you know, there was a bill that was run last year that really was kind of dangerous, and it actually got a hearing. And she said, you know, even in states like Kansas, gun owners need to be aware of what's going on here because stuff can slip under the cracks, or, you know, under the door, through the cracks. So I said, well, come on the show and let's talk about this. Had a great conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy it. And it is a serious topic. Rebecca's point is absolutely correct that the gun control lobby will tailor its message to its intended audience, right? So what they say and what they push for in places like New York State, it's not what they're saying and pushing for in places like Kansas, but they're still at work. They might have more work to do in a state like Kansas, but they are still hard at work trying to infringe on our right to keep and bear arms. Take a look and a listen. Representative, that's probably, by the way, the only time I'm going to refer to you as representative. But thank you so much for coming on the program. It is so good to see you again.
It is always great to see you. And I prefer that you just call me Rebecca. So that works.
That's fine. We've got to get the formalities out of the way. And listen, I think it's incredibly important that you are a state representative, as we've talked about in the past. I mean, you decided to run for office because of your advocacy and support for the Second Amendment. So I want to recognize your achievement, darn it. And I'm glad that you were there in the House of Representatives in the great state of Kansas.
Well, you and roughly 72% of my constituents. And so this last election that we had, I won by even a better margin than I did the first time I ran. And so I appreciate the opportunity to serve my neighbors. I mean, that's what we're supposed to be doing. And as such, I also get to represent the people that may not even live in the state, that may not be in my district, that may be all over the place, because the Constitution means what it says and it says what it means.
Absolutely.
So whoever believes that, I'm here representing you.
Well, we are glad to have you there. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we talk about Kansas. It's an interesting state, right? I mean, you've got Republican supermajorities in the legislature. You've got a Democrat governor. You've got permitless carry. You've got a lot of really good gun control laws on the books. And I think Kansas is one of those states where, you know, maybe gun owners feel like, all right, I don't have anything to worry about, right? We've got that supermajority there. We've got the really good laws in place. Maybe in Washington, D.C., I need to worry about what the Congress critters are doing, but I don't need to be worried about what's going on in the state capitol. And that's not the right attitude to have.
No, it's a very incredibly dangerous attitude to have, actually. And an example of that, we just saw this last year. Kansas is great. Kansas is great for gun laws. There are things that we could be doing better. There are situations that we are trying to move the needle even further into liberty. And it is important that we're still having those conversations. Typically speaking, when something that would be considered quote unquote anti-gun pops up, then we're pretty quick to squash it. Most of my colleagues in the legislature, even on the Democrat side, have a firm foundation of, well, you do have a right to bear, and you have a right to maybe even keep it on you. You know, I mean, you can make the argument, even on the Democrat side, for the most part. What people don't understand in gun-friendly states is that you have very well-intended people who typically are pro-gun that will also want to side on, err on the side of what they would consider compassion. So this last year, we had a bill that was brought up that looked compassionate. It looked like, hey, this may be middle ground that we can come in on. It was, the structure of the bill was to build a self-reporting, voluntary, do not sell list.
Okay.
So on the surface of things, hey, I don't feel comfortable for whatever reason. I've got a medical issue, a mental health issue. I've got small kids. I've got something in crisis. Like our friends, like Sarah Albrecht, she has Hold My Guns, and they have those conversations all the time. Walk the Talk America has those conversations all the time. So on the surface level, it looked like, hey, this is a compassionate way that we can meet in the middle and people can self-report. The issues that were actually in the bill, and we had a hearing on it, which is unheard of, and it's in the committee that I am the vice chair of. And of course, I'm like, oh no, this, we don't want to open this can of worms. This right. is a dangerous can of worms. There are far other better conversations that we can have.
Yeah.
But because it comes across as compassionate, we opened that can of worms. We had the hearing, and all you heard from the hearing was, well, my loved one ended their life, and it could have and should have been preventable. Mind you, every single one of those people that came to testify that also said that this particular law would not have helped in that instance, in their situation, mm-hmm. but it's a good idea nonetheless. The problems with the bill itself were that, one, your mental health or your family physician could report you, and you could ask them to report you. And then it's on them to get that paperwork done and turn that in. In the meantime, you're still in this situation. You're still struggling.
Yeah.
So we're relying on a third party to report you to the KBI, the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, is who is going to house this list.
Okay. And but they couldn't only do so unless you ask them, right? I want to make sure this isn't a red flag law we're talking about, right?
Well,
or is it like red flag light?
It would be the building block. This okay. is the foundation for red flag.
Okay.
And in that instance, for one, you've got that window of time where this person who feels like they're a danger to themselves and others
right.
is not being reported, because there's, you know, kind of a gray area on how long before the doctor or whoever has to report them, and okay. then how long the process is to get them on the list, which, of course, the KBI was like, no, it's a click of a button. It's super easy to get somebody on the list. Keep that in mind. So the other way that the bill was structured was that you could self-report. And what that entailed was you wrote a letter. So you type up a letter and you send it in to the KBI with a photocopy of your ID. Okay. When you start to think about how many people have access to a photocopy or have access to take a picture with their phone of your ID, mm-hmm. we're talking every time you start a job, that's the first thing you're getting hired and you're in the process, you hand them your ID. Right. You are.
Didn't we just anywhere. See this leak of some app? What was it? I think it's called T or something like that, right? It's for women to like dish about guys, right? And they.
Yep.
Had all of this data unsecured, including, I believe, people's photos, right? Because you were supposed to upload your photo and they said they would delete it, but apparently they didn't delete it. So yeah, I mean, how many copies of our ID are out there on the internet, supposedly behind a paywall that could be hacked? And maybe they're already out there available for people to take a look at, right?
Oh, sure. And as a candidate, whenever you're running for office, if you want the privilege of being able to do ads and things like that on social media, all the social media, one of the process pieces is that you have to send them your ID. So, I mean, we are even to the point where we are sending in a photocopy of our ID to social media entities. And then these are the same people that determine what we get to post, how far we get to push the boundary when we're talking about gun rights.
Yeah.
And so it's to say that it was a dangerous, and everybody uses the term slippery slope. This was a dangerous step in the beginning to slide on that slope all in one bill. And you had good, well-intentioned, typically pro-gun, strong pro-gun, NRA A's and A pluses.
Yeah.
They were going, well, you know, I mean, if it's self-reporting, if you're reporting yourself, and it was screaming into the wind. We had the hearing. We didn't take the vote in the committee because I eventually got the point across that we need to look further into this. We need more information before we vote one way or the other on this, because this is incredibly dangerous and Kansans have no idea.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of additional information that maybe you can bring to your colleagues, because we have this law in Virginia. And I actually wrote about this law a few weeks ago because there was an op-ed that came out nationally, not here in the state, but advocating for this very thing, the voluntary do not sell list, right? And I remembered I'd written about this a couple of years ago. I think I need to update the numbers. So I asked the Virginia State Police how many people are on this do not sell list. I'd asked them in August of 2022, which was about a year after the law took effect. So in the first year, Rebecca, 24 people signed up, a whopping 24 people. A couple of years later, that number has now grown to 56 people. So in a state with several million people, right? I mean, you know, this is a rounding error, the number of people who've actually taken advantage of this law. As you say, this opens the door. And by the way, we have a red flag law in Virginia, too. This does, I think, lead to a slippery slope. But it is also, if the goal is to save lives, which I think is the goal, right?
Right.
There are better ways to do this than to adopt a no sell list that people can put themselves on that very, very few people will actually put themselves on. You talked about, you know, groups like Hold My Guns.
Yes.
And to me, that is where the legislatures need to be focusing their attention. What can we do to help these FFLs provide offsite storage when somebody is in crisis, or when they simply don't want to leave their, you know, collection unattended if they're going to be gone for an extended period of time, right? That's one of the things about these programs. They don't ask why you need to use their facilities. They just say, we're here for you and we'll hold your guns for, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, may charge you a nominal fee. Maybe there's grant money available in the state of Kansas to, you know, help provide safes for these FFLs so that they don't even have to charge a fee to do this. Right. But I am encouraged, A, that you are raising concerns about this no sell list, because as you say, right, this is presented as, well, it's just an option. What's the harm, right? It's something people can do voluntarily. To me, not only does this open the door for red flag laws, but the harm comes because we'll decide to do something that's ineffective instead of doing something that's more effective, right? Yes. So, you know, suppose, I guess we could walk and chew gum at the same time, but, you know, that's not always possible, particularly in legislative sessions, right? We're gonna tackle this topic, and here's the one way we're going to do it. Yes. So I hope, and I guess I'm asking this question here in a roundabout way, will you be offering a counter proposal next year that might focus on ways to improve offsite storage options in the state of Kansas?
Actually, I am in discussions right now with several different FFLs. We do have one, and it's not enough. We have one that is actually currently partnering with Hold My Guns. And so that's, you know, a few hours away from me, mm-hmm. in a very large city in Wichita, and for the state of Kansas. And so we are trying to figure out how best to get out of their way. That is my intention. That's my goal, is to have these difficult conversations with the FFLs on how do we get out of your way so that you can provide a service, whether it is through Hold My Guns, whether it's something similar. How do we make a network for you that the government's not in charge of, that you guys can have conversations? Because their whole thing was, well, this makes it more effective because then it goes out to all the FFLs, and instead of just going to the one that you're close to, your neighboring gun stop or mm-hmm. gun shop or whatever. And it was an interesting conversation trying to bring that up, because, you know, the people who are pushing things like this, who are pushing things like red flag laws, they don't want options right. that take the government out of it. They don't want private sector to do this on their own. They want to have their hands in it. They want to have a say. And so, you have very well-meaning people who typically align with you who are going, well, I mean, maybe we should get the government involved. And as far as my liberty standpoint has always been, the less involved the government is, the better. The more red tape we can cut so that these options are available, whether you are rural or urban, the better it is for Kansans. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues that I had with the idea of this whole process is that family members, very close family members, who may or may not be dealing with crisis situations, in whether it's in their home or whether it's just a close family member, they are more apt to write the letter and send in the ID on behalf of someone who may or may not be making that choice for themselves.
Right.
And in the process, I brought up that, you know, this particular bill lacked any kind of verification. There was no follow-up. They get the letter, they see your ID, click, you're on the list, and then it's your job to come in and take yourself off the list should you just determine. And I mean, we all know how that goes. We know how hard it is for people to get off no-fly lists, even if it's, you know, a three-year-old and just a similar name.
Right.
And so it's one of those things that there was no mechanism in place to prove that the person is who they said they are. And there was no affidavit that went with the letter. There was no verification. The KBI doesn't come in and monitor. Well, I mean, if you feel like you're a danger, maybe we need to address the individual to see if you're a danger with this one particular tool, are you going to be a danger with other particular tools?
Yeah.
How much of a danger are we talking? And so it was rather intense for someone in my position that's been in advocacy for well over a decade now. And I've seen this before, and I've seen it in other states, and how it can be used and abused and how it builds from there. The anti-gun side doesn't have a stop. There is no backstop for them. There is no too far. They are pushing all the way through, and they are the definition of when you give an inch, they will take a mile. And here in Kansas, we can't afford a centimeter, because we are trying so hard to shore up our rights and be the best that we can be for our constituents as far as participating in liberty. And this comes across as pseudo safety to me. And it harkens back to Ben Franklin talking about security and safety. And if you're willing to give up your security for temporary safety or for pseudo safety, you don't deserve either. Here in Kansas, as far as I'm concerned, my constituents deserve the Constitution. They deserve their inherent rights. And this was a bridge too far for me.
Well, I'm glad that it is a bridge too far for you. And I'm glad, again, that you're offering an alternative, right? That's the other thing, right? Gun control activists will, you know, they'll claim that, you know, we don't have any solutions, right? We don't have any ideas. We just want to ignore these problems, which is not the case. I mean, again, there is so much advocacy and growing, I would say, yes, advocacy in terms of, you know, destigmatizing mental health for gun owners. With the, you know, like Walk the Talk America, providing those resources for gun owners who may be in crisis themselves, or may have a family member in crisis, like Hold My Guns. You know, these are legit solutions. These are legit answers. And as you say, they are not government driven. They are grassroots driven. We know that they're effective. We just need to get the word out there. And as you said, we might need to get the government out of the way. So I appreciate you doing everything that you're doing in that regard, Rebecca. But again, I also appreciate you reminding us that, you know, no matter how red a state we live in, no matter how pro-gun our laws might be, as you say, the gun control groups, they don't have a stop, right? And they're constantly looking for ways to wiggle in there. And in a state like Kansas, they're not going to waste their time proposing a semi-auto ban like we saw in Colorado, right?
Right.
Because they know it's not going to go anywhere. So why waste their time? So what are they going to do in a state like Kansas? They're going to do this. They're going to start with, well, it's voluntary. You know, hey, it's about reducing suicide. This doesn't impose any new restrictions on lawful gun owners. And once they get that inch, as you say, they then go to the next step. All right, well, we've already allowed doctors and healthcare providers to report these patients to KBI if they're asked to. Well, why, if they believe that their patient is dangerous, don't they have a duty to report to the KBI, right? And all of a sudden, now you're talking about a red flag law.
Yes.
So you're right. Vigilance is necessary no matter where we live. Our rights are under attack in all 50 states, including Kansas. I'm glad we've got you there defending our rights in Topeka. But it is Topeka, right? Is that the state capital?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
It's been a while since I've had to know that. But I am glad that we've got you there, and I'm glad we've got you here on the program today, and I hope that we're going to get you back. I hope that I get to see you at some point in the near future. Do you have any plans to attend any Second Amendment events, like within, let's say, the next 12 months?
Well, let's see. I will actually be out in Salt Lake City the same weekend as GRPC, because 2 days prior to that, well, I guess for the 2 days leading into that, I am going to be part of a brand new first ever federalism summit where they are bringing, it's supposed to be nonpartisan.
Okay.
But everybody that's lived for, you know, 10 minutes knows that you bring your partisan with you in any room that you walk into. And so, but it's structured to be nonpartisan, and we are going to just be diving into what is the state's role? What is the state's jurisdiction versus federal? That way we can some semblance of get on the same page with what are we responsible for and two, what is federal responsible for and two, so that we are not wasting our efforts and so that we can better help our constituents in our own states understand that this is how you need to attack this. And this is the avenue that you need to attack this. That way, we aren't just swinging blind, because for years we've been swinging blind. There used to be a federal level committee that kind of did this, and they really haven't been doing a very good job. And it's clear that they haven't been doing a very good job because these state legislatures don't understand where their jurisdiction starts and where it ends.
Yep.
And so we're kind of the pilot program. There are people from several different states that are kind of the pilot program of getting together and saying, what do we want this to look like? And what do we need to know?
That's very cool.
Because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. All right. So you'll be there for that. And then are you going to stick around for GRPC?
I am, because I mean, I might as well. Two conferences in the same place. That
absolutely.
Never happens.
Well, I'm not going to be there for the Federalism Summit because I didn't get an invite for that, but I will be at GRPC. So I will see you in Salt Lake City at the end of September. I'm very glad to hear that.
Excellent. No, I'm very much looking forward to it. GRPC is one of my favorites that we have in the gun community because we get so many different people. It's a great cross-section of the protection of Second Amendment movement.
Yeah.
And so it's always a lot of information, and it's always very good information, very relevant to what's going on right now and where you can plug in, how you can help. So yep. I love that one.
Absolutely. I do too. And I'm glad that you're going to be there. Representative Rebecca Shmoy, thank you so much for joining us on the program today. And I will see you in just a few weeks.
All right. Thank you.
My thanks to Representative Shmoy for joining us on the program. I hope we get to see you in Salt Lake City, by the way, at the Gun Rights Policy Conference. It is the last weekend in September, I believe September 26, 27, 28, something like that. You can find out more information at secondamendmentfoundation.org. Our buddy Mark Walters, friend of Cam and Company, going to be emceeing the Gun Rights Policy Conference. I will be among the many speakers, but there's a fantastic lineup. Costas Moros, who just signed on as SAF's legal director, he's going to be giving a talk. I mean, it is sort of a who's who of the Second Amendment movement. But you also will find some names that maybe aren't quite as familiar, but they're bringing a lot of information. They're bringing great stories. And again, it is, you know, this isn't like the interannual meeting, right? There aren't acres and acres of guns and gear. This is a policy conference. So if you're interested in the policies and the politics surrounding our right to keep and bear arms, there is no better place to be than Salt Lake City the last week of September. And again, find out more information at saf.org. All right, let's move our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report, which also, by the way, was sparked by a conversation with a friend of the show, Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League, called me this morning. We were talking about the latest with Kyle Kaluta, the Air Force veteran who is being held behind bars without bond for simple possession of firearms in a large capacity. I think it's a large capacity ammunition feeding device. Kyle and his girlfriend had basically just moved from Arizona to Massachusetts. They were essentially living out of their car. They were indigent. And they were trying to make a couple of bucks door dashing when they got pulled over for supposedly some traffic violation. Officer finds out that the car does not have insurance. He gets ready to tow the car. Just going through an inventory and what's in the car. Found like some ammunition cases and then asked Kyle, do you have any firearms in there? And he said, yeah, I do. And that was enough for Kyle to be cuffed, taken to jail. The district attorney asked a judge to deem Kyle dangerous, and a judge agreed. And in the state of Massachusetts, the dangerousness statute allows someone to be held without bond for up to 120 days. So the good news is that the Owners Action League is assisting Kyle with his defense. He doesn't have a public defender anymore. He's actually got a legal representation thanks to Goal. They're working with him. And the first goal of Goal is to get Kaluta out of jail. But Jim mentioned this other story to me. He said, you know, it's outrageous that you've got this guy who's an Air Force veteran, honorably discharged. There doesn't appear to be, you know, anything disreputable in Kyle Kaluta's past. He's been deemed dangerous for possessing a firearm without the proper paperwork, essentially. Meanwhile, he said there's this guy who shot at somebody on Route 93 last week who's already out of jail. I said, are you kidding me? So I said, yeah. He said, I'll send you the story. Well, he didn't need to. I started looking, and this is the headline that I found. Now, the headline doesn't really tell the story. Quincy man accused of shooting a car carrying a pregnant woman, what we know. Well, what we know is that this suspect, who just like Kyle Kaluta, by the way, is innocent until proven guilty, Michael Bragel, age 33, was arraigned last Friday on multiple charges, including assault with intent to murder, assault with a dangerous weapon, illegal possession of a firearm and ammunition, which, by the way, is the same charge that Kyle Kaluta is facing, and attempted assault and battery with a firearm after allegedly shooting at a vehicle carrying a pregnant woman during a road rage incident on the Southeast Expressway in Boston earlier in July. Statement from the DA's office said the pregnant woman and her boyfriend were driving northbound on Interstate 93 around 5 p.m. on Tuesday, July the 1st, when a pickup truck swerved through traffic and nearly hit him. When the woman honked, the driver, believed to be Bragel, stopped, got out, pulled a gun, fired a bullet that hit the couple's car near one of the front doors before speeding off. The boyfriend caught the truck on video, showing an all-town construction decal on the back window. Police traced the plate to a Quincy address, according to the Patriot Ledger, that was linked to the company. They identified Bragel, who's the company's owner, as a resident. The couple later picked Bragel out of a photo lineup. He was arrested on July 14th. He also has an open case in Quincy for malicious destruction of a motor vehicle. So this is not his first run-in with the law. And yet, you know it's coming since this is today's recidivist report, right? According to the Patriot Ledger, Judge Stephen Kim set bail at $3,000 with GPS monitoring if released. He was ordered to have no contact with the other people involved and not have any weapons. He is due back in court August 28th for a probable cause hearing. $3,000 and Bragel's free on bond after accused of shooting at a woman and her boyfriend during a road rage incident. Kyle Kaluta is accused of possessing firearms in a magazine that is illegal in Massachusetts without the proper paperwork. And he's been deemed dangerous. He's stuck behind bars. He doesn't get to get out. He doesn't get a GPS device. He's not told to go back to court. The state can hold him for 120 days, and he's been in there for about 5 weeks already. Now, different jurisdictions, right? Judge Stephen Kim's in Suffolk County. The judge who declared Kyle Kaluta to be dangerous is in Worcester County. But this is still the same criminal justice system. And we are all supposed to be equal in the eyes of the law, right? Justice is supposed to be blind, but we are all supposed to be equal under the eyes of the law. So again, why is somebody accused not only of illegally possessing guns and ammunition, but accused of a violent felony offense trying to murder somebody? Why are they out after posting what is essentially a pittance when Kyle Kaluta is unable to post bond? Now, I will say again, given Kyle's circumstances, even a $3,000 bond might be too much for him to be able to pay. But no bond is an injustice. Even without the case of Michael Bragel, it is an injustice. But when you compare what's going on with Kyle Kaluta to what is going on with Michael Bragel, the injustice is just unmistakable and undeniable. If you would like to help Kyle, by the way, you can go to goal.org. You can make a donation and make sure that you know, like, I want this to go to Kyle Kaluta's legal defense team. All right. On to today's armed citizen story from, I believe this is Forney, Texas. Yes, Fox 4 in Dallas-Fort Worth reporting. Intoxicated Forney man shot after forcing entry into neighbor's home. Now, at first, I thought, again, it doesn't matter, frankly. I mean, if someone's breaking into your house, whether they're drunk and they don't know where they are or not is kind of beside the point. You have a legitimate fear and a reasonable fear of death and great bodily harm. But in this case, this wasn't somebody who just got drunk and mistook his neighbor's house for his own. According to Fox 4, this happened last Sunday, July 27th, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Police learned that there was an ongoing dispute between these neighbors, and witnesses told police that the suspect was intoxicated and went to the neighbor's home in a, quote, agitated state. Family members and bystanders even tried to prevent the suspect from going into the neighbor's home, so he knew damn well where he was. The suspect then allegedly forced his way into the neighbor's home through a glass door, and then once inside is accused of physically assaulting the neighbor. So, okay, this... clearly not a case of, well, I just didn't know where I was. No, he was told, don't go in there. Don't do this. He didn't care. He walked in, started assaulting the neighbor. The homeowner was armed with a gun, according to police, and shot the suspect twice, once in the abdomen, once in the chest. the suspect airlifted to a hospital for treatment. And when they are released, they will be booked into the Kaufman County Jail. According to Fox 4, the suspect will face charges of burglary of a habitation upon release. I've got to think assault thrown in there to boot, since he was apparently assaulting the neighbor. But anyway, we'll keep our eyes open for any more details on this particular story. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. It's another, boy, this time of year, it seems like it's either water-related or fire-related. Today, once again, is fire-related. Good Samaritan helps rescue grandfather, two kids from Sackow Fire. This is a different story than what we talked about yesterday, about the 65-year-old gentleman who was rescued from his vehicle. As WMTW in Portland, Maine reports, this Good Samaritan was working on sealing a driveway in Sackow on a Tuesday afternoon when he noticed smoke and flames coming from a house across the street. So the worker went over to the burning home, apparently ran inside, and helped a man and his two grandchildren escape safely. Courtney Boudreau lives next door, so the smoke and fire so big and came on so quickly. They were all fortunate to make it out, and their dog, too. She said she was walking home from the store, and she thought it was her house that had caught fire. She said, when I saw the flames go up, I actually heard a crash. The glass had exploded. Officials say the single-story home rented by a family from Vermont. Neighbors say the two children spent a lot of time there, that they and their grandfather had got out of the burning home just in time. Everybody was crying. It was chaotic, as you can imagine. But again, thankfully, this Good Samaritan, who, by the way, was identified, Shamos Paving and Seat Coaling of Windham, Maine, said that the Good Samaritan, one of their employees, a guy named Tyler Johnson, and fellow employee, told the TV station in Maine that Johnson was back to work on Wednesday. Johnson, not available for comment, apparently, but in the right place at the right time. Well, as you know, another resident of Sackow said, Rick Towley said, rarely do you go to work any day thinking you're going to have to go into a burning building to help someone. And anybody who can do that with that kind of courage, without knowing who's inside, deserves to be thanked. I'm sure that Johnson was thanked at the scene, but I'm glad that he's getting a little bit of extra attention as well for, again, being in the right place at the right time, and most importantly, willing and able to do the right thing. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. Just a programming note, I will be off on Monday because my birthday is over the weekend, too, so I'm going to take a day off to wrestle with the fact that I'm 1 year older. And I'll be back on Tuesday, though. We'll have more of the latest Second Amendment news and information for you from all across the nation. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Between now and then, we're going to have you covered again with all of the news you need to know about the attacks on your right to keep your arms and about the successful defenses of our Second Amendment rights. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll get some great benefits, but you will also be supporting the pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. We greatly appreciate your support. Right, have a great rest of your week. Fantastic weekend, everybody. I suppose have a good start to next week as well. We'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.